Welcome to Story Comic Presents, where we interview amazing storytellers and artists. This is episode 351. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and we're honored to have with us the nationally acclaimed illustrator and celebrated poet and the revered coordinator for the Words Out Loud Fall Reading Series, Mary Elder Jacobson. How's it going, Mary?
Good, and maybe you can say national since I have family in other states that love me.
The book just was released April 9th, correct?
Yeah.
Stone Chat?
Yep.
This isn't the first time you've been published, but this is actually your first own...
My first book of poems, yeah.
Yes, okay. Yeah, this is your first book of poems.
Period, with my own name on it, yeah.
Right. But you've had a lot of your poems already in periodicals and other publications. But as we said, this is the first time you've actually had it with your name on it and everything.
Yeah.
I'm very curious on the title, Stone Chat. What's the meaning behind that?
So Stone Chat is a bird, an old world bird. And it was apparently named for the way that its call sounded like stones being knocked together or pebbles falling or something like that. And so I wrote a poem called Stone Chat. And it kind of came about, I think one of the things you're interested in is kind of like people's creative processes or something. And I love the dictionary. And I was once writing a poem and trying to decide which word to use for stone or pebble or, you know, and I thought, well, what's the difference? And so I was looking these words up in the dictionary just to kind of help nudge me one way or another. And my eye fell on Stone Chat, right near stone. And then when I read the little thing that said named for the way that its call sounds like, I thought, who named that bird? And so I left whatever poem I was working on and started thinking about, who was this person who named the Stone Chat? And it was kind of a sort of pivotal moment with the poem because I started to make up a story about the person who named the Stone Chat. And I realized partway through creating it that the character was a man, like I was crediting a man with naming the bird. And I thought, wow, why am I doing this? And so I went back and it's a woman. So in my poem, it's a woman who names the Stone Chat.
Really? And where's the bird native to?
Well, the old world. So Europe, Africa, Asia, not.
All right.
And it's you can look up videos and hear it doing its thing. So it's not something I've ever seen before.
What made you decide to actually have the title of your book of poems, Stone Chat?
I think it's a cool word, and that there's the title poem is a female who is, you could say, finding her voice or like being empowered and naming something. So it seemed appropriate for like me, a woman, having a collection of my words that I've written down. And then lately I've been thinking, I don't think I thought about this a while ago, but I was thinking about, stones being knocked together, that that's a kind of conversation. It's also kind of like these topics and things that we experience coming up against each other, the tough things that we encounter maybe, and then also the song that we encounter. So we sort of have both the tough and the songful and poems in conversation with each other that maybe those stones knocking together is kind of a conversation.
Like you said, it almost kind of celebrates hard conversations that you would have at the same time after those conversations end, it actually ends up creating something more beautiful afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
As we said, this was the first book you've actually published with all your poems, but you've been writing poems for a very long time. What was the impetus for you to finally decide to get a book published?
Well, it's not easy to get a book published. And I have, I don't think I ever focused on having a book in a way. I just was writing poems. But then when I did start thinking about having a book, I would submit a manuscript and, you know, I might become a finalist or I just got rejected. And it's often a very anonymous enterprise these days. And I'm like so fortunate. I was submitting a manuscript, and I won't say that this was exactly that manuscript because I think this became something after Rootstock Publishing decided to publish my book. But I owe it to Samantha Kolber, the publisher. A year ago, she asked me if she could see my manuscript. And I didn't think she was serious. She was. That's how it began. She got in touch with me, and it was, I feel so fortunate. It was really wonderful because she's a human being who I know, and she's local, and she's in Montpelier, and she owns this local, and so it feels like it couldn't have been more right in the end, you know. Mm. So that's how it finally came to be. I mean, I've sort of been submitting for a while now, but it never manifested into a book.
How did you curate which poems were going to be in the book, and which ones did you want to put in, but you're like, it doesn't really kind of fit right now?
In some ways that was hard because I do have a lot of different kinds of voices going on. And so I really looked at, like, I tried to look at what is my best work, like what am I most proud of and what is hopefully not going to make me cringe in 5 years or, you know. And then I have a very good, the first woman that I ever studied with, Elizabeth Spires, I'm still in touch with her, and I sent her my manuscript, and she picked out a few that she said, you know, I think you could take out a few of these, and she gave me great feedback in that way. And it was mostly what I had sent her, but it was good to have her pick out a few of the small poems that I then took out. And then it ended up there's a lot of elegiac pieces, and I had lost my father more than 20 years ago. So I already had that going on. And then after I met with Sam, like 2 weeks after I met with her, my mother passed away last June. And suddenly there was like another parenthesis for me, sort of like there was father poems and there was mother poems. And I think that kind of gave me a certain way of directing it, but that's not entirely what the book is. But it did sort of, and it was actually really exciting to think of a person that I knew that was Sam. Once I had a real person that I was then arranging this with in mind that she would be reading it, that made it feel different too.
The poems that you kind of picked, do they have to fit a certain theme or do they fit a certain rhythm was more important to make sure that was
it was more about not that I don't actually read poetry books from front to back cover usually myself. I sort of just dabble and kind of just take it, but I did, it helps me to arrange this by turning the page if what would feel okay after that one. And part of that had to do with say having something mournful or elegiac, but then having something kind of funny or kind of quirky or written in another voice of an animal or personifying sun. Like, so it gave me some way to kind of, okay, not so that I didn't have something harsh after something else that would have a good segue.
And what would you say also would be like the audience for this book as well?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I hope that I believe that the poems have a lot of universal human experience impact. even though the particulars might be of my life, but I think they speak to, you know, our life experience, family relationships, life and death.
So you mentioned earlier that you yourself, who reads poetry, you don't read front to back. So how important was it for you as the author of it to have your poems in a certain order? From the publishing perspective and the editing perspective, how important was that for Rootstock to put the poems in a sequential order like that?
So the sequence was important to me, like in curating it and how it, and including, you know, I have quotes up at the front and sort of how each poem would follow the next one. But the great thing about Sam at Rootstock, she respected my choice. And then at the end, I had like three brand new poems that I wanted to add. After what I'd kind of sent in, and she had good suggestions about, oh, this one might fit nicely after that one, or this one might be good at the end because it has such and such, and your first one has such and such, and you know, like the last one has dark and light, and the first one has dark and light in a different way. No pushback or anything.
For those that might be in a similar situation where they have a nice collection of poetry, but they're kind of hesitant to wanting to get it published, so they might submit some to, you know, some magazines or periodicals. What would be advice that you would give to them that how to get a book of poetry published?
Well, let's see. One person gave advice on poetry, and I don't know how to explain this, but they recommended, you know, to try to think of it a chapbook, like write in the size of a chapbook and sort of establish that. And then maybe you could end up having three sort of chapbook sized sections that could then become the whole book. And I know for me, just in terms of submissions, you have to develop a tough skin, you know, and just not take it personally when you get rejected. And every time something comes back is an opportunity to look at it again and revise it. I had a friend once, she was surprised when I said I always revise poems after they come back, but it's not completely true, but a lot of the time when it comes back, because it takes 6 months or a year to come back or something, and you look at it differently with fresh eyes, and you're like, you know what, actually that line could be better. And and I think getting out and getting to know people, I think that's important. You know, that's, at least I like it when the world works that way.
Right. And so also as an illustrator, are you the one that designed the cover as well?
No, I did not. But I'm so thrilled that this is the cover. So this is by a Swedish artist named Christina Anshelm.
Okay.
And she kind of came into my family's world when her cousin lived in Annapolis around the corner from my parents. And so my mom was able to see the neighbor had some of Christina's work. And it's just wonderful. And so the original of this print is actually very large on white paper, and it's like 2 by 3 feet.
Wow. And,
it was my mother's, and now it's mine. It's framed in my living room. It was in my mom's house. And once I got the idea, I was trying to think of something that might be have a bird element, but I didn't want it to be really, you know, birdy, and was looking for things and suddenly remembered this piece and as I said, my mom had passed away and it was still down in her house. Once I had the idea of this for the cover, I couldn't lose it. I just really wanted this piece of art, but I thought, well, how the heck am I going to get it? How do I do that? It's under glass. It's 11 hours away. And, fortunately I had a little old, kind of exhibit catalog of Christina Anshelm's that her cousin had given me. And I looked in it and this print was in it. And so I have a friend who's a designer and she was able to scan it. I wasn't sure if it would be high res enough or not. And it was, and, yeah, so, I'm thrilled, could not be happier with the cover.
Sort of similar to your design when you work with Pen and Inks as well. That's what made me wonder about that.
Well, I admire her work so much. And if anybody mistakes her work for mine, then that's a huge compliment. But yeah. And I have a couple of her other prints, and one is called Sleepwalker. And the first poem in the book is called Sleepwalker. And it was inspired by her print.
As of this recording, you're also going to be in a few days, you're going to be also part of the Poem City.
Yes, I'm reading on Saturday the 13th, so just in a few days, with two other, it's sort of a debut rootstock author poetry reading, and it's myself and Amy Allen and Kim Ward, who both have books out from Rootstock. So the three of us are going to be reading at 12:30 at the Kellogg Hubbard Library.
It's kind of fun to think about, like, the three of you all together actually have some elemental titles to your poem books as well. You got Mountain Offerings, you got Stone Chat, you got Fire on a Circle.
So it's,
yeah.
I haven't read their books yet, and I've met Kim, but I haven't met Amy yet. So I'm excited to kind of be in the same room together. And then the three of us are also reading at the Norwich bookstore. I'm looking at my calendar. I think it's the 24th. And then I'm doing a little thing in Adamant, part of Callis, called a Sonnet Circle at the little Adamant Community Club that we did last year, and people liked it, so they asked when I do it again. So I'll just read for a bit, and then people can come and bring a sonnet by themselves or by someone else. It's just a kind of a casual read them aloud in that little old schoolhouse, which is fun.
Now, Mary, do you want to read one of your poems for the listeners and viewers?
Yeah, I was thinking if you asked me, I wouldn't know what to read. So we could do free association. You could throw out a word and I could see what. Or I could read the Stone Chat poem, or I could read.
Yeah, read the Stone Chat poem, sure.
Who first thought to name it? Who first heard its cry? Before she heard the Stone Chat, did she stoop at river's edge, the weight of an infant pack heavy on her back, her blistered feet blessed by the water's foaming eddies? Did she ask what sort of pebbles fall that they may sound like birds singing? When she first heard the Stone Chat, did she hear the rhythmic whisper her broom sang into air, moving its patterns across the dirt floor? Did she pause long enough to notice the design her body and broom had wrought out of the dry earth, the straw-combed hearth at her feet, the way the ribbed dirt lay like a tablet before her? Perhaps it was then that she squatted down to trace her name in the blankness. Then, when she called the lines her own, connected sound to sight and heard again the falling pebbles, their music drawing her eye to an open window through which she saw on a wavering branch, small and copper-breasted amid white flowers and dark berries, the song's true source, to which she listened, then wrote beside her name, Stone Chat, Stone Chat, Stone Chat.
So Mary, we mentioned earlier too that you're also an illustrator. What's next for you now that you've got the bug on publishing your first book? Is there other ones in the works now too?
Well, there's always other poems happening. I don't know what will be next. And illustrating has been sort of like here and there over the years, but I do wonder sometimes if I'll do something with, illustration in it. When I was little, I always wanted to do a kid's book, and I don't know that I'll do a kid's book, but I could see now doing some combo of something. Not quite sure.
Well, so Mary, congratulations on getting your first book published. That's exciting. And you have gotten amazing reviews already and feedback from the book. So highly recommend for all of our listeners and viewers out there to please go ahead and check out Stone Chat. And definitely, if you can, or order it from your local bookstore and ask your local library to put it on the shelf as well.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm really honored and humbled by the various words that have been coming my way. So it's just been really lovely. Thank you.
Any final comments, Mary?
It's been nice talking to you, and thanks for having me.
And then what would you, so cause you did mention as well as that you yourself as a reader of poetry, you don't read front to back because of that. Hang on, let me time. I'm going to take my watch is ding. Did you hear it? Did you hear the ding?
I did hear it. Yeah.
All right. I got to take that off. All right. What time? 13. The best part about it, see Mary, I can just edit it and then the ding will disappear in the final. You won't even see it.